And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to Friday's 9 till noon show. It is Friday the 3rd of January 2025 and it's 4 minutes past nine. We have a Friday panel who are in studio with me this week. I'll introduce you to them very shortly, but we're all very interested in your views throughout the course of the hour as well. You can WhatsApp and text 086 60 25000, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Or if you prefer, you can send an email, comments@highlandradio.com. If you want to watch the show, get onto our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. That's good to watch on your smart TV and Fire Stick, if you wish. We're also on Facebook and on the X platform. Right, who have we got in studio with us? We have Cassie Lamb, youth activist. Good morning, Cassie. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you keeping? How's your Christmas?
Lovely Christmas, quite enough.
Good stuff. That's the way to have it. Chloe Martin's a political student at Queen's University in Belfast. Good to see you again, Chloe. How are you keeping?
Good, how are you?
Good. How's Belfast going?
Yeah, good. A bit more busy than here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've known since I've known you, and I don't know you very well. You've just wanted to get out of here, really, effectively. That's kind of what it was like, wouldn't it? In a nice way.
Well, my mother's listening, so let's...
All right. I mean, to spread your wings, like, you know, of course. Stephen Sheridan's a member of the Mulroy College Students' Union and has a big interest in politics as well. People might remember we chatted to Stephen briefly during our general election coverage. Hi, Stephen. How are you getting on?
Oh, well, I must have done something right that night.
Exactly. Oh, we were stuck. I'm not sure. No, I'm
that's
joking.
What of I
course,
think happened.
No, it's not. Of course not. We were very keen to get you on. Right. Thanks to all of ye. Just yesterday, it popped up on the wires here, as we call them. It's the news service we received. The government's to turn to high-profile figures as road safety ambassadors following a review of the Road Safety Authority. The chair and chief executive of the organisation have traditionally taken on these jobs, but the Department of Transport has recommended they be handed over to well-known people. So your demographic, guys, will be a focus of much of this, unfortunately. The statistics show that, younger people are overrepresented in the awful fatality figures. We don't know if these high-profile ambassadors will be YouTubers or TikTokers or other well-known people. I don't know. But the question is, do you think that's the best way to get the message through to younger people? I'll start with you, Stephen.
Well, I've had the opportunity to talk about road safety before with very relevant stakeholders, you know, the guards and the county council and the likes, you know, when it comes to the Road Safe Roadshow that I know yous would help out with very often. I've recommended it before, you know, especially coming up to June time around here, that we do get, you know, whether it be rally drivers or TikTok stars or just generally well-known people, you know, to have a road safety message. And it's already been done on a global level. You know, the FIA, which is the global motorsports body, you know, they've been putting out advertisements for years with DJs and models and not only racing drivers, you know, but whether it be actors and actresses, you know. So I think it's absolutely necessary. You know, it really does get the message across, I think, if the FIA has been able to do it, you know. So.
And why is it? Is it that those voices seem more relevant to younger people, that they look up to them and maybe heed what they have to say a bit more?
Well, absolutely. You know, you're better off hearing it from someone you know. It's a bit more relevant than hearing it from some mysterious figure in a suit, you know, that claims to have all these different titles. Like, and
well, someone older that feels preachy.
More or less.
Cassie, what do you think?
So, Greg, this was my first year actually going to the roadshow as a TY student. And to say the least, I think everyone leaving the Aura that day was nearly a chilling experience. But that's the reality of road safety, that it really needs to be looked upon. I'd say if we could do more of those likes of roadshows, because I think it's nearly better to bring in other people's experience, not just the driver or the families, but the guards, the doctors, and everyone else who's looking after the person who may be in the accident, because it's really showing that, you know, it's not just a family and the person being harmed in the accident, that a guard might have a family to go home to after such an experience. And I think we need to keep going with the roadshow message across Ireland.
Yeah, so do you believe that more of the focus should be in that? Because often what happens is when we try and resolve or fix something in this country, we chuck money at it, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, they'll have a budget, they'll hire the TikTokers with the best algorithms and what have you, or, you know, I'm not quite sure who they'll get to speak on it. But should they split the focus then between that, yes, if that helps, like Stephen believes it might, and focus more on sort of presenting the realities in a more blunt way, like you witnessed this year?
Yeah, no, I definitely think the actual reality, because I've always said, I cannot wait to get a car, I can't wait to start my lessons. But then when I was leaving there, I was like, it's not just doing your theory, getting your lessons, it's actually getting ready to be safe on the roads, and that's what we really need. And I think it's the best way we can possibly do it, is actually to bring in real life experiences of it, and not just paying influencers or any celebrities just to get that message across. I think it's the best way in the reality, in the real world of it.
You know, it's quite interesting, because both from you and Steve, your and Stephen's comments, a lot of what you think we should be doing, we're actually doing in this county, you know, and it's maybe not happening to the same extent on a national level. Chloe, what's your view?
In terms of influencers, I'm going to be honest, I don't know what kind of impact that would have on young people. I know myself, like, not that I would ignore an ad from the RSA if it was on my TikTok or Instagram, but if I'm scrolling on my phone at 11, 12 o'clock at night and I see an influencer talking about road safety, it's not something that's going to, you know, really engage
I tend to agree with you. I think if they were, you know, plugging a product that I might be inclined to purchase, right, or something, then I think it works in that regard. I'm not really sure how I would stop scrolling and engage, you know, with anyway, go on, carry on with your point.
Yeah, I don't think that it's really how to get people to pay attention to road safety. And I think organisations and the government kind of have this common misconception that social media is kind of like a fix-all, solve-all kind of solution. And whilst it's a great kind of app and it's a great thing to have, sorry, I don't think that the influence that the young people have in their lives, it doesn't actually mostly come from social media. Mm-hmm. If I'm learning about road safety, I think I would have taken it more in when I was in secondary school in a classroom.
Yeah.
And if they're targeting young people before they get the chance, before they get to actually drive, they need to be employing it in things like, you know, even like in religion classes, getting people to come in and talk about real life experiences. I think that will be far more effective, because when I see an ad on my social media, I scroll right past. Like, it's not something that really engages me.
No, and all political parties, I think particularly Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin, threw a lot of money at social media in the run-up to the election, and I don't think it really made any difference. It's hard to quantify how much it did or not, but I don't think it did. I don't think it's a great space to reach people on. So did any of you have any, outside of the Road Safety Roadshow, did road safety or driving behaviour feature at all, or has it featured at all yet in your education, Stephen?
Not personally in mine. Now, I know there would have been a TY programme that would have looked at driving lessons and general road safety. It'll teach you, you know, seatbelts and airbags and whatnot, but not necessarily, not so far for me anyway, but maybe that's because I haven't reached the age of driving yet, you know, and neither has many of my peers in my year. Like,
yeah, but a lot of people are out of school, you know, halfway through the 17th year too, so.
I suppose now, because now I'm only starting fifth year, so maybe it might come up yet.
If it didn't come up in fourth year, I don't think it's going to come up in fifth year. Yeah, you did transition year, did you?
I did, yeah.
Cassie, have you had any, other than the Road Safety Roadshow, has there been any talk of road safety in your school?
Well, not for me, again, personally. I think it's something that we're definitely looking into. I think for me anyways, because I think road safety is really extremely important, especially that you can nearly get a subject in and actually start to go through driving early, but not at the time we didn't actually have, you know, anyone from the guards come in or anyone from the hospital to come in and actually
I mean, this is so going backward. I remember in national school, the guards coming in, and that's a long time ago, let me tell you, coming in and talking about this, and you don't want to meet me in the darkness of night after a collision or some, you know what I mean? That was part of my schooling in national school, and that's going back a very long time. Cassie, you're through second level. Was there any talk of road safety in your education?
Cassie or Chloe?
Chloe. Help me out here.
I think
she's only 12. Obviously, she hasn't finished. I'm joking. Go
on.
You're going into fifth, aren't you?
I'm in TY. Yeah.
TY, yeah, okay. Sorry, Chloe.
I think we did a class in TY, and it was like a half an hour long thing. Nothing too much. We never had someone come in and talk about road safety. Anything I
like, I think
about.
That's remarkable.
Yeah.
If we're going to take this anyway serious at all, that three of you from different sort of schools and what have you have little or no experience of a road safety message in school, other than Cassie, other than the road safety roadshow, which is brilliant, mm-hmm. but it's a very short, sharp shock, isn't it?
Yeah. No. The roadshow, I think it's about maybe an hour tops, but you know what, everyone. It was such an enjoyable thing in a way, but it had such a message that was extremely chilling. But if you're going, like you said about primary schools, I even remember the guards would actually come in and talk about the importance of a high vis, and you'd be running around and they would have like fake traffic lights on and off and saying, right, you need to stop at this colour and you need to always look around. Yeah. But again, that's primary. A 10-year-old or 5-year-old aren't getting their license or certain their theory at 5 or 10. You're starting at 16, 17.
But if you're going to do the sort of pedestrian stuff, you know, bring it through into secondary and start on the driving and the practical side of it, all that kind of stuff. Stephen, have you any insight or understanding as to, you know, sometimes why younger people are a little bit more careless? Is it maybe a sense of, you know, being bulletproof, or, you know, nothing will ever happen to me, or...
There's a cool factor, I think.
Yeah.
There's a, you know, coming across cool on the Snapchat story, you know, there's a showing off aspect, I think, now, just from the way I see it anyway. I find very often there's, you know, there's lots of, you know, burning the tyres, you know, and pulling off with a sharp old clutch and all that, but it's... You know, I think that's all it is. It's a bit of a showing off factor. There might be a bit of a no fear aspect to it, but I think really it's a looking cool aspect.
Chloe?
I think majority of the people, this is coming from someone who doesn't have their licence, but the rest of her friends do.
Mm.
My friends drive ridiculously slow, constantly. They're so nervous and careful on the roads. I suppose it depends on, I think gender might come in there a wee bit as well. But
and there's a bit of cultural thing too, I think, you know, and whether you're boys or girls, you know, if you're into your cars, for some, like for me, the car was always an A to B job, really quite boring. But for others, it is about the, you know, it's there's 0 to 60 and the, you know, so I think it depends on which demographic you're into, doesn't it, Chloe?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm from Fannad, so you do be hearing the cars raving going past the house and the rally and everything, and I get it that people like their cars, but I think for majority of young people, sometimes, I think it's usually from the ages of like 17 to maybe like 19 that, you know, be it guys are getting their first Lexuses or what's going on, and they want to kind of impress people, and so they're running around raving, but then they tend to calm down a wee bit after then. But I know people that are in their 30s, 40s that are reckless drivers. And
oh, no, 100%. Yeah, but it's just like, I don't think, you know, if I were a reckless driver or my peer group were, I don't think they're hiring TikTokers to sort of reach me, if you know what I mean. They probably would be doing well to do so, but I don't believe they are. And the statistics show that, unfortunately, irresponsible driving is across the whole demographics, but this seems to be a case of trying to focus on the young people. But you're quite right, and just to emphasise what Chloe's saying there, this isn't about blaming it all on the young people, but this is where this move seems to be coming from. So then, what is the consensus before we take a break and move on? That, right, okay, if this is a strand of the road safety message, so be it, but the focus should be on education in schools and throughout life at different points. Is that our consensus?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, okay. And you see, this is where I wonder sometimes if the government and the Road Safety Authority actually poll younger people to get their opinions on it, because they are the people in this instance that they're trying to reach. Okay, we'll be back with more from our guests, Cassie Lamb, youth activist, Chloe Martin, political student at Queen's University Belfast, and Stephen Sheridan, member of the Mulroy College Students' Union and has a strong interest in politics. More from them after the break. We were talking yesterday about how many squad cars were out on the road, the level of policing over Christmas and New Year's. And quite interesting, Brendan O'Connor, who's the former spokesperson from the GRA, who'd be a regular guest on this show. This was his assessment of his Christmas patrolling. Having spent the whole of Christmas sharing a 10-year-old patrol car between three stations, it's good to know where the money allocated by government's actually going. And he had quoted some funding application or other that wasn't about frontline policing. But that's an insight in terms of why maybe there wasn't the high-profile Garda presence you might have expected. a 10-year-old patrol car being shared amongst three stations. Right, we're in the company of Cassie Lamb, Chloe Martin, Stephen Sheridan. Being woke or wokeism is now generally accepted as referring to a broader awareness of social inequalities such as racial injustice, sexism and denial of LGBTQ plus rights. For some, it's a badge of honours. For others, it's a slur now. You know, you're woke or your wokeism gone mad and all this kind of stuff. But curious, from a young person's perspective, what does wokeism mean to you? And if you feel it's a good or a bad thing, Chloe, I'll start with you, if that's all right.
You know, the woke culture, woke isn't really a word that I think I would use.
No, nor me neither.
But, you know, the kind of woke movement, I suppose you could call it, has really shed a light on things like, you know, racism and homophobia and sexism in, you know, our modern society today, and movements like the Me Too movement and Black Lives Matter and things like that. And it's a really great tool that's kind of been used across social media in terms of advocating for human rights. Now, a lot of people, I think, the woke culture kind of depends on how it's being implemented, because some people are really genuinely just trying to get across the need for, you know, equal rights across the board. But some people take it a little bit too far. And then that kind of, from people maybe on the far right side of things, kind of rises a wee bit of anger towards that and thinking they have to, you know, walk on eggshells, which I don't know if that's true, but anyway. So I think it really, it's about balance, you know, like promoting justice without resorting to alienation, like the whole, with the woke culture came cancel culture, where it was very much if an influencer or somebody kind of in the public eye made a mistake,
Or a picture from 15 years was dragged up or something like that.
Whilst I believe in accountability, definitely, it wasn't a case of accountability. It was a witch hunt. It was more of a cancel them, get them off the face of the internet. I never want to see them again. And it's something that's really, really hard to come back from, cancel culture. And it's also kind of, it's just a trend. You know, it'll be something on, like, TikTok was all over the Conor McGregor case there. And then suddenly it's disappeared again. You know what I mean? It's more so where the algorithm goes.
And it becomes a war, a culture war, doesn't it? You know, we saw with the Johnny Depp trial there as well. It was just almost whether or not you believed a woman or a man. Yeah. It kind of was just reduced down to that, wasn't it, really? And even with the Conor McGregor situation, as you mentioned, which is more contemporary, it came down to whether you believed a woman or a man rather than the... What's... You know, wokeism to you, Cassie, you know, I mean, as I say, I just wonder what age categories are using this phraseology. I think, is it a left versus right row that's amongst a small group of people on X? Or is it, you know, throughout generations and something that's, you know, in on your phones or in the schools?
Well, personally, me, anyways, I wouldn't really use the term woke. I don't think I ever have, and I don't see myself saying it either. I've always kind of seen, you know, even my time on Highland Radio, I've always said the fact that there's always two sides to things. Everyone has their own opinion. And even Chloe talking about, say, the Black Rights Movement, and, you know, there was always so many movements, say, LGBTQ+, and especially coming up to the likes of elections, it's great to see that people actually stand up, talk about it and their opinion about it. But unfortunately, in this world, there are other people who will turn a blind side to really important topics and say, my opinion's better than yours because I say so, and that's the society we're getting up to. That's not okay.
Yeah. I think wokeism originally was referring to race. Mm-hmm. I read a sort of a broad synopsis of what it is described as on the internet, but I think it's really probably boiled down to and been filtered down to competing rights, say, for instance, the rights of women versus the rights of trans people, you know, and it seems to have sort of almost boiled down to that. Is wokeism, or whether you use the word or not, or just the theme of it in your life at all, Stephen?
I think when it comes to the term woke and woke culture, I think there is a bit of a confusion there, where people are very quick to label things now as woke, you know, just as they blow it off as woke, but I think there is people are very quick now to label certain opinions, certain views, certain thoughts as woke or super woke or whatever, simply, but they're really just, you know, progressive thoughts and opinions that inspire, you know, an inclusive society rather than, you know, a real...
But you can get an equal level of pushback for regressive opinions, as some might describe them as well.
And that's why it's important to have debate. Like, it's, you know, when... I think people are just getting a bit mixed up. People are getting, you know, they're very quick to jump the gun and label things as woke, you know, and label things as far right, you know, and I think we really just have to slow down a bit, and it's time to kind of debate things out sometimes to really establish where certain thoughts and opinions lie.
Chloe mentioned a couple of things there in terms of wokeism. I don't use the phrase either. Funny enough, none of us seem to use it right, but it's just the catch-all for what we're talking about. And also the cancel culture. Do you think there was a period of time, and it seemed to be like a period of 3 or 4 years, that the conversation that Stephen referenced there wasn't happening? Because at the same time as people were speaking about people's rights or whatever, and you can call it woke or what have you, that people with differing views were afraid to speak out for fear of being cancelled, right? So maybe in certain areas we've gone too far and the cancel culture was used as a tool, right, to maybe go too progressive in certain areas. I don't know what you think of that, Chloe.
I think definitely, listen, people can always take things too far. And a lot of people are very quick to, you know, that term snowflakes is really running around these days. Don't know how I feel about that one, but I'm not going to comment on live radio about it. But I definitely think that some people have taken it too far. But I've also seen a lot of people saying that, oh, they're afraid to speak politically incorrectly and they're afraid to say this and that. Personally, I believe it's really not that hard to speak without saying something that's sexist or homophobic or racist. It's not that difficult. Personal opinion, but I do see people are really afraid to voice their opinions, even with things like the general election. A lot of people were kind of scared to put their thoughts out in that because, you know, there were certain parties that were really going against each other. And as well with the election in America, it's very polarized, whether you were on Trump's side or Kamala's side. And it was very much, I've seen people on TikTok who have like disowned families because they voted, say they were from a blue family and they voted red or vice versa. So I think that it's kind of become a thing where people are too afraid to speak out on things, but then are they too afraid to speak out on things or are they too afraid to be held accountable for the things that they're saying?
Yeah, but also you have to, there's two things happen, isn't it, right? You speak out, but also you have to listen. And I just wonder, Cassie, if we aren't listening to each other anymore. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that if you and I had a difference of opinion, you know, my way of doing it would be that we have a conversation, right? And my view might change or your might change. What happens now for certain age groups certainly is if you are sort of very right-leaning, you go on X, right? And if I'm quite liberal, I'll go on Blue Sky, right? And I'll sit in Blue Sky chatting to loads of people that agree with me, and you'll sit in X chatting to loads of people that agree with you, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the sort of polarism that we're seeing in American politics and start to see here sort of stems from, because we don't engage with each other. We're not talking to each other. You're of a view, and you hang out with people with that view, and I'll be of a view, and I'll hang with people, you know, in when we end up in echo chambers.
Yeah, no, that's the amazing thing about youth activism, I think, anyways, that I know that myself and Stephen, we've had our own debates in the past, but, you know, if I always see the idea that if me and yourself, Greg, if we had two different opinions, I wouldn't leave the table until it's actually sorted out. I'd say, okay, that's fair enough if you believe O's are the best in the government right now, and that's amazing. But I believe that X's, it's their time to come and take over. You know, we need to actually say, take out the facts, take out the figures, and actually say maybe this, that, and the other. But at the same time, you actually have to make someone else's opinion valid, because you just can't say, well, X's are better because I say so, and not actually saying why or saying the fact. But I always will think, and I always will say, everyone's opinion is valid, everyone's opinions matter, even if you didn't agree with my opinion. That's just the way I see it.
So you believe Donald Trump's opinion matters? You see, this,
unfortunately,
you know, but you see, you know, this is where we're at. You see, like, what you're saying, the right stuff, right? But at the same time, you know,
here I'm not going
to
say
you
that
have to walk the walk and talk the talk. I'm not calling you out on it.
No, not
it's just
at all.
The question is sort of really. I know where you think we should be and where I think we should be, but the reality is that we are finding ourselves really, either consciously or subconsciously, being quite polarised in who we want to listen to and don't want to listen to.
Yeah, and as well, if you include social media into it, that's if you have a certain influencer, a certain person even, and if they're on your For You page saying something that's not true about a certain politician in America, in Ireland, or anything, you can believe it. And
I found with social media, there was a couple of resources, and Twitter was, it had its own issues, right? But it would be the place you'd go for news, you know, and news you could trust to some extent, you know, on the ground reporting and what have you. And it's not like that any longer, you know. It just really is not like that, because everything is been altered with AI. It's been edited. It's being politicized, whether it's blue or red in America or wherever it might be. Just before we move on, Stephen, in terms of sort of youth politics, right, and you've an interest in politics, is there a broad spectrum of views there? Like, you know, do you get conservative voices, for an example, in youth politics, or is the sort of default that if you're active and interested that you're probably going to be more liberal, or even, dare I say, more woke?
Absolutely. There is a good mix there. You know, I've seen people from all parties, you know, involved in youth activism. I've come across different views, different debates. But I think you are right. It is a very, you know, liberal majority when it comes to, you know, youth politics and youth activism. And I think, you know, was it Chloe said about the witch hunt? Like, if you offer a different opinion, more often than not, you're chased. Like, and I think that's what creates, you know, a bit of an echo chamber then for, you know, very liberal politics and liberal.
Because there's,
you know,
a small
mindsets.
Enough amount of younger people perhaps getting into politics or having an interest in politics. And if you're more motivated to do so because you know, have more liberal views, it's not necessarily positive then, I don't think, if you're not embracing all different types of views. Like, I wonder, are the political debates whereby there are, you know, genuinely different views on different matters amongst young people?
I'd love to see more debates on such topics when it comes to different views and different, you know, sides, I want to see them come together, and I want to see debates there, because at the minute, absolutely, we're living in an echo chamber here, you know, and a different opinion is chased, and it's important to bring these groups together, and, you know, you shouldn't be afraid to have your own views and have your own, you know, preferences.
Cassie, did you want to come in there?
Yeah, no, 100%, because I think as a young person anyways, and if you're in the field of politics, if you actually say an opinion that doesn't agree by certain politicians or certain others, they might actually turn a blind eye and say, okay, because of that opinion, I might just...
But is it a particular type of opinion that's most likely to be pushed back against? Is it a more conservative opinion?
Yeah, I would say so, yeah.
Well, that's not good, is it?
No.
Because I don't think the default position should be, I'm young, therefore such and such.
I know. Unfortunately, we don't live in that society.
Chloe, how long have you been... You're early enough in Belfast, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm just finished my first semester.
Right, so is there anything you've gained from that? I mean, of course you have, but just in terms of, just so for listeners who aren't aware, Chloe's a political student at Queen's University in Belfast. Like, is there anything that you've gathered from that has surprised you about the course or the politics or the way it's being taught or the angles or anything like that?
In terms of the actual subject, not really, in terms of it's very theoretical and it's all kind of, you know, there's a lot of numbers in there and stuff. It's a really interesting course. But I think what really got me with, just when we're on the topic of opinions and everything, Belfast is obviously really well known for, you know, there being that whole Protestant Catholic divide. Mm-hmm. And I found since going that it's become more that you can talk about it openly now.
Yeah.
And we actually have debates about it in class. And that's something that's really opened my eye, because we're on about, does Trump get an opinion there? And, you know, everyone's entitled to an opinion, be it a right one or a wrong one. But what I've learned through this course is that there's a difference in having an opinion that you keep to yourself and having an opinion that actually affects the lives and the well-being of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So say now somebody didn't want to chat to me because I'm from the South and I'm Catholic, say, that is a harmful opinion. That's directly harming my well-being or my mental health. Whereas if they express that opinion, if they think it because of generational trauma and all that jazz, and they keep it to themselves, that's fine. That's not harming anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that just kind of proves the opinions that, you know, you can have them, but it's about how you implement them actually matters.
But everyone has an opinion now, and everyone believes that everyone should listen to their opinion.
Yes.
And think social media is the space in which that happens now. It's not in... Yeah. The discourse of the debating room, right?
Yeah.
It's someone who says, it's someone in your class, right, who theoretically says, I don't like Chloe. So they set up a puppet account on X and just start harassing you that way with their opinion.
I think some people need to touch grass a wee bit there on that one, and just kind of, you know, everyone has their own opinions about everybody, and everyone thinks that they deserve to be heard, and everyone does deserve to be heard in some capacity.
Mm.
But freedom of speech extends out as far as, whilst you have the freedom to say whatever you want, it doesn't mean you should.
No, and in freedom of expression, there are consequences to that as well. People believe we have freedom of speech. We actually don't. We have freedom of expression, but there are competing rights there as well. Right, okay. That's the voice there of Chloe Martin, a political student at Queen's University in Belfast. Stephen Sheridan is with us as well, as is Cassie Lamb. Let me see. Does your panel think that the Donegal County Council road safety campaign in the Aura Leisure Centre works, and instead of it being once a year event, should be held more in schools all year round? Cassie, you've seen it most recently. I'm not sure the way it's set up, I'm not sure there'd be any benefit to you seeing it more than once, certainly in the one calendar year. It's not that type of a show. I've been involved with it myself, but you already expressed your view that you think it should be utilised more.
I think TY, one time a year, I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
I really do. I think if you wanted to bring it more into secondary schools, I would say the guards have no problem coming into school, talking to your students about road safety.
Well, there's lots of well-being classes, you know,
yeah, exactly.
And stuff like that there. I mean, what's more important to your well-being than your life, for an example?
Exactly. And I would say you can bring it to your well-being. The guards don't have to come in every once a week for the next whole year. I think they can come in once a month, even once a year, just to talk to Leaving Cert 5th and TY students and come across like that, because I don't think that we need to keep putting so much funding into the roadshow to have it 4 or 5 times a year, because I remember I was excited nearly to go to the roadshow, coming out of it chilled.
Yeah, that seems to be
the experience.
Yeah, okay. A caller says, the cohort who don't do TY are who should be targeted for road safety more than TY. What are the statistics around young people who cause or are involved in fatalities or accidents in terms of which senior cycle program they complete? Schools are always asked to educate young people on this, and rightly so, but target it properly and do long-term sustainable programs. It's a good idea to run programs in schools, as they definitely impact the students, but don't just target TY for longer programs. Well, it's not just TY classes. There are other classes, Leaving Cert Applied being there. If you go into fifth, and you don't do TY, you're invited to go there as well. Stephen, did you want to say something there?
Well, I've just been involved. You know, I was sat in the Donegal Youth Council there for the past 2 years, and I had the opportunity to help out with the planning of the roadshow. And I just want to make that clear that, you know, schools are encouraged when the message is sent out to send fifth-year cohorts, to send fifth-year groups, as opposed to TYs now, as just so we can catch, you know, as wide a group as we can, you know. And everyone does fifth-year, not everyone does TY. So if we can catch that bigger group and, you know, hit as many people as we can, then that must be, you know, that's really what we're getting at. So I just wanted to catch that kind of.
No, that's what you're here for. I notice a lot of Garda vehicles are often parked all day at the Garda stations. How's that a good use of cars, says a listener. I noticed driver behaviour is a lot to blame. Everyone is always in a rush. Take a look at your time management and slow down. And the convoy to Letterkenny Road, by the way, is blocked partially, at least due to a car road traffic collision. Please drive with care. Oakfield Park and Kelly's Funeral Home, Ruffo, the roads, black ice, very, very dangerous. It can be quite misleading. You wouldn't know if you're going to come across ice or not. Right, it is the 9 till noon show here in Highland Radio. It's our Friday panel. It's a youth panel because they're not back at school or college yet, so it's a good opportunity to get them in, and we'll have more from them and your comments and what have you after we take a break. I've asked this question of youth panels in the past, and indeed some of you sitting in front of me, if you saw your future in Donegal or Ireland after you've completed your education. Cassie, I'll start with you because I remember yours was a kind of a no. Do you see anything changing or in place that makes you feel you can forge a career, or if you wanted to acquire a home here, are you any more optimistic?
Well, I've always said it and I will continue to say, when I have my education done, our world is huge. There is so much to discover about it, and I would love to see myself hopefully in Australia and stay there for a while, and I hope to go into a career in healthcare. So, you know, it's a tough job. I'd love to go to Australia and the likes. But I have a cousin in Dubai and he was just home for Christmas. And it's the way he was telling me all about Dubai and telling about how great it is. And, geez, it's like 40, 50 degrees already out there Christmas time. And you're like, wouldn't that be lovely? Now, yeah. You know.
And so, maybe the slight change in your view, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, is that more it's about life experience now rather than maybe a desperation of the surroundings.
Yeah, no, because I think I've grown up a little bit more past from the last youth panel, but, you know, I've always just want to travel anyways, but I just think Australia or the likes of Dubai, there is just so much more to experience. And, like, I will always remember where I came from. I came from Donegal. I'm proud to say I came from Donegal. But do I see a future here? I don't think so. Mm. And if I were to stay in Ireland, I think I'd rather stay in the likes of Dublin. Yes, is it more expensive? 100%. Will I probably be broke if I went to college in Dublin? 100%. Mm-hmm. But it's more the likes that there's services in Dublin that are provided, that are not provided in Donegal. You know, we were up, me and my sister were up in Dublin there during Christmas time, and we were just out by our hotel, on a bus, onto the Lewis. We were, you know, for two Donegal ladies, we were extremely impressed, you know, and we were surprised we even got on the Lewis to get on it. But, you know, I think there's just so much more to offer than what the government has given us.
I got on the Lewis once to go to Sligo. It was quite embarrassing. I was up to high dough, panicking. <out. laughs> It was my first time. And then I had to get off and then run back to the station to get a train. I don't know what I thought this thing was going to Sligo for. Right, Stephen, what about you? You know, where do you see your future? Do you believe you can? Do you believe you can have a successful, happy life based in Donegal or Ireland, for that matter?
I think I can. I'm really impressed by the investment that's coming into Donegal at the minute, you know, whether it be healthcare or education or so many different industries are, you know, being brought into Donegal now, and, you know, there's significant investment coming into the region. But just, you know, Cassie there, you're saying, you know, you want to go away to Australia, you know, you might get a bit of experience in healthcare. Like, do you plan on coming back after a while? You know, you'll come back, you'll develop experience out in Australia, and I think a lot of people are doing this at the minute. You know, they'll go out, they'll, you know, learn the ropes out in some sort of an industry out, you know, abroad.
That's a good thing.
And then come back and we have, you know, a developed workforce that know, you know, exactly what they're doing. They're well trained now, you know, and we've received more or less free international training for all our, you know, for all our workers. So,
do you believe people who have state-supported education, third-level education, education, should be obliged to work here for a year or two before? So, say, for instance, I don't want to personalise it, but say someone qualified as a nurse or say someone qualified as a vet, and obviously you have to contribute to your own education, but do you believe that they should be obliged to work here for a year or two at least as some sort of a clawback before heading abroad?
I don't think so. I think that would only, you know, would only kind of sour things between, you know, educated young people now that are ready to go into work, and you're saying, right, you have to work here now in this healthcare system. Like, when you could go away, you know, develop your skill set and then come back, and you know, you're very well equipped now to handle this healthcare system.
Cassie, you're... So, no, you wouldn't like to see any obligation to work here for a year or two?
You know what, like... The HSE can come through and say, right, we'll pay for your education if you come and stay and work in Ulster for the next 3-2 years, because I think that's one of the programmes that I could be following. And that's only because then my education, I won't be in debt then if I went to Australia or the likes of Dubai or wherever I end up. But as well, if I went to Australia, say tomorrow, I could be earning more money as a nurse or as a dietitian than I would be here. And I could actually come home and actually be able to afford a house, because that's what's actually worrying me, that I might not be able to have a home. That when I came home, I might be still living with my parents, whereas I would actually like to maybe have a bit more money, be able to come home and actually buy a house or rent a house even.
Chloe, what's your view?
Listen, last time I was on here, I couldn't get away fast enough.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think... the novelty of living in the city, it hasn't worn off. And I love Belfast, I really do. My opinion is that I want to travel. I'd love to go and do my master's in like Edinburgh and go and take a gap year and just disappear for a year and come back. But I think being away kind of makes you realise how important it is to come back again, because I have a huge family and I have so many relatives in Australia and England and down the country, and you don't realise how much you actually rely on your family until you're in a situation where you need them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if I ever have kids in about, you know, 30 odd years time, I would want
to
raise...
do the maths here, but go ahead.
I would want to raise them in the place that I was raised, go to
but
the school.
I think that's an amazing sort of a sign of maturity or that or growth, isn't it? Isn't it? And it's kind of interesting, sort of been a little bit on that journey with you, Chloe, in that, you know, as you say, it's not that you're a home bird and you're not enjoying Belfast or what have you, but, you know, when you have that bit of independence, you do sort of go, right, okay, you start assessing things. I think that's really great, like, you know?
Yeah.
And the answer for someone else could be, wow, I was spot on here. I can't wait to get for, you know what I mean? But yeah. I think it shows great personal development, and I think that's a really important part of third level education as well. It's not necessarily the courses that you're doing, it's also the life experiences and all. Just one other question in this area. How important is home ownership? We're obsessed with home ownership in this country, right? In other countries, it's seen as an anchor, right? So if you're in a part of Germany, for an example, where a lot of people rent, or Belgium for that matter, and you go, you know what, I wouldn't mind going to Spain. People can almost just get up and go and rent somewhere else, right? Whereas here, if I were to do that, it would be a nightmare because, you know, I've still got a mortgage, I've got a house, I'm anchored here, right? So I can see maybe it's a positive, maybe it's not. Stephen, is home ownership a target for you, or affordable, you know, sustainable rent where you do have a bit of freedom? I don't know, what's your ambition?
I don't think it's necessarily a priority. You know, if something comes up that I can rent, then that's perfect. You know, yeah. And if it's, you know, affordable, and if it's something I can manage, then that's class, that's ideal. But at the same time, you know, if possible, it would be nice, but, you know, it's not really a priority for me. No.
What about you, Cassie?
Well, it's like saying tomorrow if I went to buy a house and I've never actually went into a house before or didn't sleep all night in it, you know. I think we're very quick to actually purchase a house very quickly and not living in a home for a certain period, because you could see, like, maybe there's flooding in the area, or, you know, electricity could be going out very quickly or anything on the likes of that. So then I always think it's better to start off renting before you actually purchase a certain home, because you're actually saying, right, is this really my home? Do I actually see myself here, you know, in that certain way?
Yeah. Okay. What do you think, Chloe?
I think we actually just moved into our own house now, going back a year and a half ago. We were just in, you know, renting for the other part, and I will say it never really felt like you had creative freedom.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Yeah.
While we were renting a house, yeah. And this is coming from a girl, like, my mum painted my room bright pink and I had a Disney princess poster, so it was my own. But I think it never really feels like it's your home, whereas, like, we moved house now, even further into the back end of Fannin. And, you know, you're able to do what you want, and, like, if my mother allows me, but, like, you know, it's more, mum was able to pick out the colour she wanted in the kitchen and what way she wanted the windows facing for the sunrise.
And that seems attractive then, watching on, doesn't it? You go, actually, you know what, I wouldn't mind a piece of that down the line.
Yeah.
Which is fine. They should not be able to, a caller says, sorry, they should not be able to leave for a few years after being educated here with taxpayers' money, as we've to import from other countries for the health service. And unfortunately, maybe not all of them have the same experience, and a few cowboys might be let in, etc. A comment was made about having to stay in Ireland after you've qualified as a medical person, etc. In France, if you graduate in a medical profession, the French government force you to stay for 4 years and work until you can leave to work in another country. How many buses, asks caller, does the people of Donegal need? There are more buses services in Donegal than ever. It's about the buses being there when you need them. Like, I mean, you do see an awful lot of buses, right? But I wouldn't like to try and survive without a car. Would you? Any of you guys know?
No, it would be that damn bus stop there at the roundabout down the road. That's, I can just see the horror pictures in my head now. But I think it is just a matter of what time. And, you know, there's been discussion about a town bus service, and I know there already is one. But that comprehensive plan that I think it's TFA have put out now, you know, that would be the ideal situation. And
I just drive by there like an episode of The Inbetweeners. Car parks in Ballybuffet, very icy and slippy this morning, right? Be careful out there. Would the students be interested in politics? Sorry, all of them are interested in politics. Would the students interested in politics ever see themselves running for election in this county? Now, that's a big step, right? I'll start with you, Stephen, this time.
Oh,
actually, putting yourself forward saying, right, I'm running for...
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. Why not? What's there to lose? You know, have a go.
Your friends? No, I'm only joking. But you would if the pathway was there, you would be elected politics. You could see yourself.
We'll give it a go, sure. If nothing else, it's.
Chloe, what about you? Is electric politics the direction you're...
Absolutely not.
No.
Every time I tell someone that I'm studying politics or that they hear I'm on the radio or something, I get an awful scene in the dark someday, and I always say not a hope.
But what happens is, though, you never know if political... A lot of people are approached now, you know, and people go up to them and say, listen, we've heard you, we like your views, you know, you come across well, would you consider? So, you know, it's not always... Sometimes that choice is put to you rather than you know... Actively making the choice.
Never say never, but I really don't think so. I think you don't have to be in government to make your voice heard and to make a change. And I think that the government are kind of just used as kind of scapegoats sometimes, because the reality is there's a lot of problems in this country and it is, you know, partially their fault. But people just need someone to be angry at a lot of the time.
And it's funny, the problems are global. If you look at pretty much every country similar to ours, the exact same problems persist. Housing. Everyone's talking about housing, everyone's talking about immigration, everyone's talking about, you know, it's so how much impact are governments really genuinely having? Even Donald Trump there, he's actually already been rolling back on some of the promises he's made. Now he's been elected, because the reality is you can't just fix everything with a silver bullet. Cassie, elected politics?
50-50 at the moment. I don't know, you know, politics has always been on my mind. It's always been one of those careers that I wasn't always 100% sure on. Sure, if you look at the likes of Leo Fradeker or Owen Murphy, they never had an idea. They never went and studied politics in DCU. They never went and said, "Right, I'm doing politics." Leo Fradeker was a doctor, and then Owen Murphy, until he read a certain book, said, "Okay, maybe politics is for me," you know? So... there's always, you never know where I'll end up. I've always said that. I don't know where I'll end up. But again, politics is a tough game and it's hard to impress everyone at the end of the day. But I'm still 50-50.
And I think too, the reality is if you were going into it with a view to being popular, you're never going to be, because there's so many different points of view. This is just a... actually, I really don't have time for anything else other than to say thank you. Actually, I thought we did, but we don't. Listen, time flew. Thanks so much, Cassie, for calling in. You're back at school Monday, are you?
Back in school Monday,
all right, great stuff. I'm sure we'll see you and speak to you again. Chloe Martin, political student at Queen's University Belfast. Do you have a direction of travel career-wise at this moment, Chloe? I know you're only just completed your first semester, but...
political journalism. Hopefully.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. And Stephen, you're back Monday.
I don't remember.
It's not easy. I'm not back Monday either. I've turned up for these 2 days, right? But emotionally, I don't know if I'll be back until Monday. But anyway, listen, all three of you, really, really interesting. Thank you so very much. Cassie Lamb, Chloe Martin, Stephen Sheridan. A caller says, from what I gather, a newly qualified doctor here is on probation for a certain amount of time, but if they move abroad, they don't do the probation. Hence... that's why they're leaving once qualified. Potentially, possibly, indeed. I don't know the ins and outs of that, but certainly something worth looking at. Okay, you're tuned to Friday's 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. Loads coming up in the next couple of hours, so stay right where you are, including, of course, That's Entertainment, our first of 2025. But we'll take a break, and we'll be back after the news and the obituary notices.